Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Later in the show, one school that went into full-on detective mode to track down the kids who disappeared when classes went online. This story has implications for every town trying to meet families in a time of need. You'll hear about it later in the hour. But first, hospitals and essential workers are trying to catch their breath after the initial COVID-19 surge in southeast Michigan, and they're still looking for ways to work safely with infected patients. Researchers at Michigan State and other regional hubs are studying the plasma donated by people who've recovered from the virus. The hope is that their antibodies can be of use to those at high risk for infection. A couple of months ago, we spoke with MSU epidemiologist Dr. Nigel Paneth about his work with the National Convalescent Plasma Project. We thought it'd be a good time to check in. Dr. Paneth, welcome back to Stateside.
Good to be here.
Last time we spoke, you and the rest of the team with the project were trying to find as many people as possible who had contracted COVID-19 and recovered so that their plasma could be investigated for this research on building COVID immunity. Have you found many people coming forward?
In our site alone, more than 11,000 people have registered as potential donors. And perhaps we're an early site, but there are sites all over that try to assemble potential donors. And we are more or less moving most of our potential donors to these other large sites. There's a site called The Fight Is In Us, which is an organization of donors. And we have shared with all our donors the websites. And so we're just trying to make it very feasible for people to find a place to donate plasma.
Correct me if my memory is not right, but what you're looking for is people who've tested positive for COVID-19 antibodies?
Well, when we began, we had no way of knowing who is testing positive, who is not. Blood banks, too, are in that same dilemma. They get people who've had COVID-19, maybe have been tested as having COVID-19, and then they accept, I think, them blood donors if they have previously had a COVID positive test. And then you find out later how high the level that the antibody titers are. The only people who are being screened for antibody status before a donation like that are people who think they had COVID but never were tested positive for COVID.
Ah.
So there the blood banks are generally requiring an antibody as evidence. But the presumption is that people who've had the disease, who have been tested, who have had the virus detected in their nasopharynx will produce antibodies. Now, we do know there is some variability in the level of production of antibodies, and that's a controversial area right now. Some people think that the sicker patients produce more robust antibodies. Others say it's not so clear cut. This is not an area I'm working on directly or our unit is working on directly, but we're following this discussion.
Some COVID tests are less than 100% conclusive. Is there similar variability in tests for the antibodies?
The problem we've mostly been concerned about with viral testing is false negatives. That is to say, people who really do have the virus, but somehow it doesn't show up on the nasopharyngeal test. Now, there are 1,000 reasons that could happen. Possibly the swab didn't go deep enough. Possibly the reagent wasn't quite fully active or whatever the reasons. False positives, however, finding it when it's not there, have not so much been reported, except in one situation, which is people who have recovered and still seem to persist in having a little bit of detectable particles of virus in their nasopharynx, which is probably not active, possibly just a dead fragment. So there's a little bit of possible false positivity there at the tail end, like a month after you're better, where we're still detecting with a very sensitive test a few viral particles that are not alive. Now, in the case of antibodies, it's a little different because there has been a suggestion of a false positive signal. And when you're testing a large number of people, let's say you're testing thousands of people to see how common previous infection has been by looking at antibody status, we have found that the tests can have even a small false positive rate can yield a pretty problematic positive predictive value when the disease is rare.
Just to recap, Plasma has potential to help frontline workers resist infection. And in prior infectious disease outbreaks, the plasma of people who have recovered has been used to try to boost the immune systems of people who might be at high risk for infection, for example, if they work in hospitals. After our last conversation, the FDA had approved the first trials to use antibody plasma as a treatment. Can you tell us a little bit about what's been learned?
Well, a lot has been learned, but not actually from the trials. Now, let me explain the situation. In early April, two things happened at the FDA. The first trial was approved, several trials that have subsequently been approved for using convalescent plasma. And the first trial was, in fact, in that population you spoke of, healthcare workers and people exposed to the disease and other groups who might be at high risk of acquiring COVID-19. So essentially in a preventive mode. But at the same time, almost the same day, actually, the EPA authorized an expanded use program, allowed people to just go ahead and treat sick patients with convalescent plasma. And what they described is people who are very sick and also people who might possibly become very sick. That was their wording. And they set up a registry at the Mayo Clinic to record everybody who was receiving plasma under that authorization, that expanded access program. That number is now over 20,000 people on the Mayo Clinic website. If you go to their website, it's uscovidplasma.org. And those data are being analyzed fiercely, even as we speak. But all these trials are still in progress. We don't have any results from them as yet. So we're relying much more on what we can extract from the Mayo Clinic data. What information do we have from anywhere on convalescent plasma? Well, it began with a few case reports in China with 5 patients, 10 patients that suggested that, well, it looks good, you know, but compared to what? You know, you have no standard of comparison. Then a somewhat larger paper came out from Italy. Again, the results, quote, look good, but compared to what? Then a paper was published in JAMA.
The Journal of the American Medical Association, for those who may not know the acronym. Yeah.
Thank you. It was from Wuhan, China, and they planned to do a randomized trial of 200 patients, half getting plasma, half not. As it turns out, the trial was stopped when they had just over 100 patients. Why? Because they controlled the epidemic in Wuhan. There were no more patients to treat. So they published their partial results, and all the results were in the correct direction. They were all showing favorable results, but the statistical significance was not reached because the study was, as we say, underpowered because they intended to have 200. They only had 100. Mount Sinai Hospital has put out an analysis of their convalescent plasma data. They've compared convalescent plasma users with carefully matched control patients who did not get convalescent plasma in their hospital. And it shows an advantage in survival for people who receive convalescent plasma, so long as they received it before they were on a ventilator. If they received it once they were on a ventilator, in the Mount Sinai data, they didn't show a benefit. That trend was seen also in the Wuhan trial. And that, by the way, was also a finding of the remdesivir trial, which came out a few weeks ago in the New England Journal as a large, good trial of remdesivir, which showed effectiveness, but only in people who had been treated before they went on a ventilator. So this seems to be a common theme.
So does that mirror what we know of convalescent plasma use for other infectious diseases? I mean, does it suggest that the antibodies work the same?
Yes. Convalescent plasma was most widely used in the 20s and 30s. And then when antibiotics came in, it kind of got shunted aside. But the papers written about those days all suggested, especially in the case of pneumococcal pneumonia, which was really a very high area of use. Pneumococcal pneumonia was common, and since it was common, a lot of people had antibodies to it. And so they would give convalescent plasma. The rule of thumb was first three days of illness, hurry up. Now we're looking at the Mayo Clinic data, which doesn't have anybody to compare to as yet, although we're working on that. But within that world, first of all, we've published that it's safe. The side effects we worry about in plasma transfusion occurred very, very rarely. And an interesting feature is that mortality is declining over time in our cohort In other words, we started at about 7-day mortality rate of 15%. And then in each 2-week interval, mortality has been dropping. It's now about 8% 7-day mortality. And we think this reflects earlier treatment. In the beginning, very, very sick patients were treated, and now we're treating less and less sick patients.
Mm-hmm.
The initial use in very ill patients, turns out that's probably not the best use of it, but that was what the FDA suggested, but allowed. It had this little, or at risk for becoming very ill. So there was a possibility of going in there with people who are not that ill. And that fraction seems to have enlarged over time as we've been collecting data since early April in the Mayo Clinic database. So mortality seems to be improving over time.
It sounds like there's a lot being learned about infection and how infection works with COVID-19. But it also sounds like we're not quite at a place yet where the antibody testing is yielding more information about infection than the standard COVID test.
Well, you know, there are other uses of antibody testing, for example, to detect what fraction of the population of the United States is immune. And if you summarize all of the studies that we've seen, some people would argue that as many as 3-4% of us have acquired COVID immunity. It's much higher in places like New York, where it might be 15-16%, much lower in places that have seen little disease, where it might be 0.5%. But that number is, of course, what it tells you is that there are not enough people to create anything like herd immunity. So we are still, the majority of us, quite susceptible still to COVID-19. So we have to be very cautious.
Dr. Nigel Paneth of Michigan State University is part of the National Convalescent Plasma Project. We're going to post information on our website if you're interested in donating plasma, maybe if you yourself have recovered from COVID-19. Dr. Paneth, thank you so much for the update.
Thank you.